have made it into court and tossed his severed head at your feet, screaming about the rebel king. Michael straightens, his jaw tightening.
Yes, we were all there.
My eyes flick back and forth between them. Did he just call that woman a hyena? My jaw tightens at the derogatory name. It's no secret that's what the have-nots are called in this country. But to hear it being spoken so plainly, as if they aren't worthy of names or respect just because of their circumstance, slaps against my insides and makes me seethe with anger.
Regardless, this isn't proper conversation for a beautiful woman.
Michael winks at me. Xander nods, running a hand through his hair again.
Yes, of course not. Timothy?
He snaps, spinning to the royal guard in the room's corner.
Escort Lady Beatro back to her quarters.
Disappointment plops in the middle of my gut. But I'm not surprised they're sending me away. I'm not stupid. They won't say anything of importance in front of me, especially before we're wed. And if I'm honest, most likely even after. Women aren't granted the same respect as a man, as if what's between my legs has anything to do with the way my brain works or my ability to process information. I was about to pluck my eyeballs out from listening to these two morons drone on anyway. I rise from my seat and move toward King Michael, curtsying. Your Majesty? His hand tips up my chin, bringing me to a stand.
Sarah, sweetheart, I'm sorry we haven't been able to become better acquainted. But you know what they say. Good things come to those who wait.
I force a small grin. I've always been told patience is rewarded. His eyes flare, and that's my cue. My skirts rustle around my ankles as I walk to the heavy wood door. Timothy, the royal guard, moves behind me, the black and gold of his uniform highlighting the deep tan of his skin, so different from the pale creams I've seen so far in this region. Timothy, right? My voice echoes off the cold stone walls of the castle halls. He glances at me out of his peripheral, but stays silent. Are you from here? Still. He stays silent. Saxham, I mean. After a few long moments of no response, I sigh. All right then, not a conversationalist. Xander was speaking of that woman, that hyena? The word is rough on my tongue, and I watch his reaction, not expecting a verbal response, but hoping he gives away clues on his face. He doesn't. He's trained well. Are you mute? I purse my lips. Or just not allowed to speak? The corners of his lips twitch. Honestly, that sounds terrible, I continue. Doesn't it bother you, being told that you can't even talk? He side-eyes me again as we approach the wing of my personal quarters, stopping once we reach my room. I reach out, the metal knob rough against my fingertips. Timothy moves to the side of my door, his back straight and his eyes scanning the area. I pause, my stomach tightening. Are you planning to stand out here all night? He quirks a brow. Right, right, no speaking, I grin. Got it. He inclines his head in a half bow, and I slip inside my bedroom, shutting the door behind me, the grin dropping from my face as I make my way across the sitting area, looking for Shayna. I don't find her, so I assume she's already turned in for the night. Good. There's a woman in the dungeons, and if no one will give me answers, I'll find them for myself. Chapter 6. Sarah B. I've made it to the servants' quarters, without meaning to, but this castle is large and a little eerie, and it's difficult to navigate the corridors in secret without knowing where you're going. Anxiety teases my middle, hoping I don't forget my way back. Muffled voices filter through the darkened hall, the only light coming from small sconces placed between the arched windows. My steps falter, heart stuttering. I hadn't expected anyone at this time of night, but I shouldn't have been so stupid. There are always people roaming halls. I continue forward, leaning against the stone, my breathing choppy as I glance both ways, making sure nobody is here to see me. This was foolish. The voices become louder as I inch my way closer to the room, and my brows draw in as I strain to hear. The door is ajar, and I move from the wall and spin toward it, crouching, my fingers gripping the wooden frame as I press my face to the crack. My breathing is shaky, and my heart kicks against my chest cavity as adrenaline floods my system. The three thin silver daggers slipped between my leather garter are cold as they press against my thigh. But I'm not stupid enough to sneak through the castle halls at night, alone and unprotected. Besides, there's something thrilling about the rush of being caught, of doing something I'm not supposed to. Squinting, I try to make out the details, but other than a long wooden table and a bookshelf in the far corner, it seems barren. A tall man stands in the center, his shadow looming over another person who's on their knees at his feet. It's difficult to see who it is at first, but the longer I stare, the more my vision clears. Prince Tristan. My heart jumps to my throat. What is he doing down here, in the servants' quarters?
Do you understand?
My stomach twists at his voice, just like it did the first time I heard it. Velvet words, while his hand was wrapped around mine and his brother was between us. His tone is deep, as if it was made in hell, then woven through silk. A gentle caress that singes your senses. Although it's too dark to make out heavy detail, I can see the person at his feet is a woman. Is Prince Tristan with a servant? Her head drops, the subservience bleeding from her paws. Tristan's spine stiffens, his head cocking to the side.
That's quite enough. He cuts her off. Leave.
She moves to stand and nods. My insides seize, worried she'll come my way, but she twists the opposite direction, her hand pressing against the wall until the small bookshelf spins in place, revealing a small opening that she slips into. My eyes grow wide as she disappears. The prince stands in the center of the room, completely still, like a lion hunting prey, waiting to attack. I bite my lip, afraid to even breathe with how silent the air becomes. My hands grow clammy, fingers gripping the chipping wood of the doorframe until it splinters. I should have waited until I learned the lay of the land. As it is, I'm lucky this is all I've run into, instead of a soldier, or worse. Gossip spreads like wildfire, and the wrong eyes and lips can have disastrous consequences. I won't make the same mistake again.
Are you planning to come into the room?
My stomach somersaults, my eyes scanning the area to look for another person. There is none. Quick as lightning, he turns, his gaze locking on me.
Or we can continue to pretend you're not here, if you'd like.
His boots clap on the floor as he makes his way toward me, his stride long and sure. My heart throws itself into my ribs, panic welling like a flooding dam about to burst, but there's nowhere for me to run, nowhere to hide. So instead, I straighten from where I'm crouched, my legs screaming in relief from the change in position, and I smooth my hands down the front of my skirt. Weakness is never a strong suit, and no matter how much I may feel it trying to wrap around my middle and break apart my shield, I'll never let it show. Reaching out, I push open the door before he can, coming face to face with him for the third time in less than 24 hours. I didn't want to interrupt, I smile. His green eyes are calculating, as they move from the top of my head down to the hem of my thin skirt and back, every millisecond pumping more blood through my veins, my heart working overtime as I try to control my reaction.
Lost? He asks.
I lift a shoulder. Taking a leisurely stroll.
He nods. Is that something you do often?
What, walking? I reply, holding his stare, even though it makes my chest pull tight. He steps in closer. He's dressed down, dark pants with suspenders hanging off his waist, and a light tunic rolled up to his elbows. The black ink that's etched into his skin on full display. I swallow around the sudden dryness in my mouth. I've never seen a tattoo in person, but he's covered. Intricate designs weave their way from his forearms and disappear beneath the fabric of his clothes. I've heard the whispers, even in silver, of the scarred prince having drawings on his flesh, but I had thought they were only rumours. It surprises me how much I like them. His brother, King Michael, is attractive, but Prince Tristan is hauntingly beautiful. He tisks.
I meant eavesdropping, little doe.
I'm no doe.
No?
His head tilts.
Then what are you?
My chin lifts as I hold his gaze. He's so close now, I can see the jagged flesh clearly on his face, and I bite back the urge to reach out and touch it, to ask him what the true story is of how he got his scars. It doesn't disfigure him the way you'd expect. Instead, it makes him even more striking, adding to his already intimidating stature. But I don't falter. I don't retreat. My nostrils flare as I move in even closer until I can taste his breath as if it were my own. I'm your future queen, I whisper. Maybe you should show some respect. His eyes spark at this, his hand reaching out and touching one of the spiral curls that's fallen from my hairpin. He winds it around his finger, the corner of his mouth lifting into a mocking grin.
Well then, I'll be sure to work on my curtsy.
Anxiety stomps through my centre like a stampede of wildebeests. But I keep my face neutral so he doesn't realise how strongly he's affecting me.
Do you think you've earned it? Respect?
His voice is soft as it slices against my skin. I keep my breathing shallow, not wanting to suck in the lungfuls of air my body is craving, afraid that if I do, my chest will brush against his torso. My teeth grind together, my mind whirling with a warning to tread carefully. I do, I reply. His brows lift, and he steps back a space, the strands of my hair bouncing as he releases the curl. His fingers rub across the front of his mouth. My eyes catch on the glint of diamonds in one of his silver rings, realizing they're the eyes of a lion, mouth wide as if in the middle of a roar. His family crest. My stomach flips when my gaze comes back to his, and the air grows thick, wrapping around us both with an unspoken challenge. A loud slam echoes off the walls, making my gut fall to the floor. Quick as a flash, Tristan's large hand wraps around my wrist, pulling me fully into the room, my fingers grabbing for his chest so I don't topple over from the sudden movement. His arm winds around my waist to steady me, pulling me flush against him. What are you? His other palm smacks against my mouth, his rings cutting into my lips.
Quiet, he demands. Unless you think being caught alone in a dark hallway with your betrothed's brother is good for your reputation.
That shuts me up. He doesn't remove his hand, and my stomach squeezes tight, my heart pumping blood so hard it whooshes through my ears. Glancing down at me, his fingers tighten around my waist. My body heats in response. His jaw muscles tighten, and he releases me, shoving until I stumble, my hand reaching behind to catch myself from falling.
Don't let me find you down here again, or I won't be so kind.
I huff. Don't presume to tell me what to do and think I'll listen like your little servant girls. His eyes narrow, and he moves forward, pressing into me until my back hits the cold stone of the wall.
Jealous?
Hardly, I bite out.
Careful, little doe. Keep running into places you don't belong, and someone may mistake you for prey.
I'm not afraid of being prey.
No.
He He quirks a brow, leaning in until his nose skims along the side of my face.
You should be.
And then, as fast as he came, he's gone, spinning around and striding out of the door, as if he was never here.
Chapter 7. Tristan. Lady Beatro is not who she seems to be. When you live your life having to look over your shoulder, you learn to sense shifts in the air long before you ever see the change. And I felt her outside the door the moment she arrived, although I didn't know it was her until she stood in front of me. My fingers flex as I remember the way her curly strands of hair spun around my finger, her eyes like ice picks as she glared at me in her simple gown and pinned back hair. She looked nothing like the regal lady who sat next to my brother. I prefer her this way. Leaning back against the observatory tower at the castle gates, I pull a matchbox from my pocket and strike a flame, allowing the orange heat to tease my skin as I reflect on her intrusion. Is she spying for my brother? Is he watching me? Possible, but improbable. Although I don't put it past her to do his bidding, I do put it past him to think that highly of her. He's not known for his respect for women. Still, she's different than I expected. More sinister, perhaps. If it wasn't me she was spying on, I'd be able to find admiration in her falsities. But since it is, it does nothing but leave a bitter tang in the back of my throat, one I choose to let linger, so I'm always reminded of the taste. That's the difference between me and other people. They run away from the bad things, and I become them. Reaching up, I pluck the rolled blunt from behind my ear and place it in my mouth, waiting until the fire has almost completely engulfed the match before lighting the end. The smell of hash curling up in the air, making my tightened insides unravel into a buzzing sort of calm. My boot kicks against the wall, my head leaning against the cool stone as I gaze out over the streets of Saxham. The castle sits on a cliff, an easy vantage point to see everything even beyond the dense trees. When I was a young boy, my father would bring me here, whispering words of grandeur and teaching me the ways of the land. This is my legacy, and one day it will be yours. You mean Michael's? I correct, glancing up at my father. His dark hair blows in the nighttime breeze as he looks over at me. You and your brother need to set aside your differences. Farsa blood runs through your veins as surely as it does his. Together we rule, divided we fall, remember that. I scoff, rubbing my swollen wrist, remembering how just a few hours earlier Michael shoved me into the dirt and called me a freak. Tell him that. He chuckles. Michael is still trying to find his place in this world. And I'm not, I ask, my voice rising in defense. From the moment you were born, you've been different. He reaches out, tapping the center of my chest. In here. Different. My chest twists. I don't want to be different, I just want to be left alone. You learned to talk faster, he continues. Walked sooner, and you were drawing as soon as you could hold charcoal in your little hands. I glance down at my fingers, flexing them in my lap, hissing as sharp pain shoots through the tendons of my throbbing wrist. Anger at Michael and his friends bubbles like a simmering pot in the pit of my stomach. It's an admirable trait, to be so sure of yourself in a world without answers. An enviable one. My brows dip in confusion. Why would Michael be envious of me? He gets all this. I wave my arm over the forest and the darkened city streets just beyond, lit only by the full moon hanging above us in the sky. My father sighs, wrapping his arm around me and pulling me in tighter to his side. Sometimes it's hard to know who you are when there's pressure to be something else. Your brother will be king one day. Pride coasts through the tone of his voice, and my heart deep dives into my stomach, something heavy and green whipping through my insides. And you, my little lion, are free to roam. But I'm not free. I never have been, not really. Years later, and I'm still here in Gloria Terra, glory of the earth. Flicking the ash from my smoke, I raise the tips of my fingers to my scar, running them along the raised edge, something sour tightening my gut. The moon is full, and it casts a glow on the darkened forest, the groans of wind the only sound other than the occasional howl from feral wolves and the hoots from owls that frequent the observatory windows at night. Pushing myself off the wall, I drop the burnt paper and herb to the ground and crush it between my boot before walking into the trees and away from the safety of the castle. I scan the dilapidated room, taking in several dozen faces crammed together at the long tables and benches, all eyes focused on me. The air smells dank, as if the frequent rainstorms have weakened the foundation and sank its way through the interior, growing and rotting the wood from the inside out. But the Elephant Bones Tavern isn't a place known for its prosperity or its upstanding patrons. It's dangerous and exists amid the shadowed lands, a place they warn even the strongest soldiers to keep far away from. And until recently, it's where I've spent most of my time, cultivating the watering hole as the home base for the rebels. Its owners are Belinda and her husband, Earl, both of them faithful followers of my cause. If you spend time within the inner circles of Saxum, however, you'll hear the shadowed lands referred to by a different name, the Hyena Battlegrounds, where the rebels roam. Although it's said in jest by those with gold lining their pockets, the ones who have never had to suffer under the cruel hands of fate, people who allow ego to be their crutch, never taking the less fortunate seriously. Whispers of rebels mean nothing to them, and why would it? No one is stupid enough to go against the crown. The Farsa family has reigned for centuries. We're too strong, too powerful, too bold. But with greed and power comes boastful ignorance and blind eyes to threats. Chinks in the armor that erodes until a chasm forms, big enough for someone to slip through and fracture the core from within. Which isn't a bad thing. I'd rather live in chaos, ruling over the rubble, than spend a second longer watching my brother sit on the throne. He doesn't deserve it.
Sire!
A trembling voice breaks through the crowd, Belinda rushing through and throwing herself at my feet. Her bony hands snake out, her body bowing forward as her lips meet the top of my boot. You may rise. She moves to her knees, her dark eyes glimmering with unshed tears. I reach out to tip up her chin, and her palms wrap around my wrist. I swallow back the disgust at having her touch me, focusing on the fact that I gave her Reginald's head, and she delivered just the way I asked. You've pleased me, I say.
Anything for you, sire,
she whispers, staring up at me with clear adoration. My hand moves from her face up to the top of her head, petting her hair and gazing out at the crowd. Let this be a lesson for all of you. While the roads ahead will be difficult and treacherous, they will also be paved with success. Stay prepared. There will be great sacrifice, and I will accept nothing less than absolute obedience. I know the gravity of the situation, of what I'm asking, but if you do for me, I swear. I pause, moving my palm to rest over my heart, attempting to show sincerity through my movements and hoping it bleeds through my tone. I will do for you. I wave my free hand toward the woman at my feet. This beautiful soldier, this warrior, trusted in me. I gaze down at her, my touch moving back to her jaw and stroking her pallid skin as my eyes meet hers. Loyalty, the highest kind, the type that is rewarded. My focus goes back to the people. Aren't we tired of growing hungry while the noble gorge and feast? Angry murmurs whisper through the air, their grievances music to my ears. Aren't we exhausted of being spit on and forgotten, as if we aren't the ones keeping Gloria Terra afloat? I slam my free hand into my chest. Isn't it time for us to rise up and rise against? Cheers erupt, fists banging on the worn tables. Down with the king! Someone yells. A laugh escapes from my throat and I raise a palm in the air, quieting them, their attention rapt once again. Trust in me, friends, and I promise I'll lead you home. Belinda cries, dropping into a bow so deep her arms splay in front of her and her nose skims the floor. Everyone else in the crowd follows suit, lowering their bodies to the ground, their heads dipped in subservience. Satisfaction sneaks through my veins, and a smirk tips the corner of my lips. My eyes meet Edward's as he kneels in the back corner. I nod, pleased at the way he freed our messenger from the dungeons and brought her back. This was important, a statement, one that shows everyone I keep my word and will keep them safe. This is but a small portion of the support I've garnered, but it's enough for the message to spread. It's hardly the truth, but perception is reality and not everything is a lie. I'm the one who will storm the castle and burn it all to the ground, along with my brother, his queen, and anyone else who gets in my way. I'm the one who will rebuild Gloria Terra, the way it should be. And if these peons are casualties in the war, I search for a modicum of empathy to their plight, but come up blank. They are simply tools, plain and crude outcasts that have found safety within me, their lord, their savior, and the leader of the rebellion against the king.
Chapter 8. Sarah B. I have seen no one of importance in 3 days. Sighing, I shuffle the playing cards, my eyes glancing around the table at my brand new ladies-in-waiting. Ophelia, a young girl with rosy cheeks and bright red hair, and Marisol, a woman who is here to help train me for the king. Both of them sit in front of me, whispering words of adoration any time I so much as blink. Part of me is disgusted, because I know their loyalty is false, but the other part is enjoying their attention. There's something nice about being treated so well, even if it comes from a place of wanting to climb a social ladder. Still, I wonder which of them are here on behalf of their families, hoping to bed my future husband and become his mistress. I wonder how many already have. Not that it bothers me either way. It's well known that kings take pleasure from many sources, and it's even more well known that King Michael prefers a buffet and isn't particular about his tastes. The more he gets it from somewhere else, the less he'll have need of me. He'll be after my purity, of course, and he'll wish to produce an heir. I don't intend to let things get that far. This is quite boring, isn't it? I say, placing down the cards and tapping my nails on the table. Shayna stands behind me, brushing through my hair as she laughs. Milady likes to go on adventures. When we were girls, you couldn't bribe her to stay still for a second. I huff out a breath, rolling my eyes as I lock my gaze on the youngest girl in the room. Don't listen to her, dear Ophelia. I'm perfectly fit to sit here and drink tea all day and eat crumpets. Giggles burst around the table, and I smile, something warming the centre of my chest when I do. Now, I take advantage of the new camaraderie and lean forward. Tell me about these rebels. Ophelia's green eyes widen, and Marisol shifts in her seat, fingers brushing over her blonde hair. Interesting. Did I say something inappropriate? I ask. Apologies if I did. I overheard talk and got curious. But from your reaction, I can see it's a sensitive subject. I pause, allowing my words to linger in the air before I continue. You know, you should tell me anyway. I wouldn't want to embarrass myself in front of anyone, most of all the king. I place a hand on my chest, giggling. Can you imagine? Ophelia hesitates before leaning in close. They're the outliers.
Outliers?
She nods, and Marisol purses her lips before adding, filth is what they are. Disgusting creatures who think they have a right to live on our level. My stomach tightens.
Do they not?
Ophelia shakes her head.
They're criminals. People say they smoke and drink until they can't see straight, and then sneak into the Upper East Side and snatch people right off the streets.
For what purpose? My brows draw in.
To make a statement?
Ophelia bites on her lips.
They're hyenas, Marisol cuts in. They've only become a problem recently, and now that they've thrown themselves at King Michael's feet.
She shrugs her shoulders, brushing her hands down her skirt. They won't be around much longer. Shayna's fingers pause from where she's pinning my hair.
That's rather harsh, she chastises.
Marisol's grey eyes cut to hers, her features drawing tight.
They hold human sacrifices in the middle of their dirty roads? Strip a person down until there's nothing left but their pride? And then they take that too, leaving only shame and whimpers for death in its wake.
We don't know that for sure, Ophelia scolds. No one's seen it happen. I suck in a breath.
Surely not. Wouldn't they want the people on their side if they planned to go against the king? Wouldn't it be obvious people were missing?
Ophelia shakes her head.
Sometimes, m'lady, there's no rhyme or reason to people's madness. And if they have someone leading them now?
Her voice trembles and her eyes glaze over. My heartbeat rages in the centre of my chest.
They're that organised.
I remember the unkempt woman from the party and the way she spoke. But I had filed that away as the ramblings of a deranged woman, driven mad by the famine running rampant in the city streets. King Michael didn't seem to be bothered, so I assumed there was no reason to take it seriously. Marisol's spine stiffens, and she clears her throat.
Yes, well, we shouldn't speak of these things. It's forbidden.
I stare at Marisol, taking in her words and slotting them away to dissect further when I'm alone.
Regardless, Ophelia says, they're not the type of people you should consort with, ever. It's enough to be tried for treason.
Of course not. Reaching out, I lay a hand on top of Ophelia's, smiling.
Thank you for telling me.
My eyes flick to Marisol, then back.
Us ladies need to stick together, after all.
It's long after everyone has turned in for the night, but I can't sleep. My mind fills with questions and my stomach floods with tension.
Rebels? I've never heard of them before.
But Xander clearly knows. Unease burns through me. I had thought I was ready when I arrived, yet here I am. Less than a fortnight, and already there's a wrecking ball thrown in my plans. A sound from outside the door makes me shoot upright in bed, my heart stuttering.
Is someone here?
I throw back the heavy duvet and swing my legs to the side, my feet meeting the rich fabric of the Persian rug. Walking to my vanity, I slip on my deep red nightdress, the long silk sleeves flaring out at the wrist and the hem kissing the floor. I cinch it tight at the waist and grab one of the blades I keep hidden in the top drawer before making my way to the door to see what caused the noise. Twisting the handle, I throw open the wood frame, glancing both ways, but meeting only silence. The area is dark, lit only by the small iron wall sconces that decorate the halls. Blowing out a deep breath, I tuck a loose black curl behind my ear and take a step out of my room. Closing the door behind me, my nerves buzzing beneath my skin. I only make it two steps before a body moves out of the shadows and stands in front of me.
Oh!
I yelp, my stomach rising to my throat and then plummeting to the ground. Prince Tristan gazes at me, his hands in his pockets and his eyes like stone.
You scared me!
My mouth is dry, and my tongue swipes out to wet my lips as I take a large step back against my closed door, placing the dagger behind me.
What are you doing here?
He cocks his head and moves closer. What are you hiding, little doe? Irritation winds its way through my middle, and I stiffen my shoulders.
That's none of your business. Why are you in my wing?
His dark brow rises.
Your wing?
Yes, my wing. Do you see any other ladies here? He glances around.
I don't see a single one.
The insult slices through my chest. Insufferable. You're as horrendous as they say, aren't you? His posture changes then, his shoulders growing taut, almost as if his aura itself is mutating into something dark, something dangerous. It's transfixing, the way he can morph from an unaffected stance to whatever this is, and it makes my hair stand on end, my gut screaming that I should watch my step.
This may be your wing, but it's my castle. These are my halls,
he hisses, moving in so close his breath ghosts across my face.
It would be incredibly stupid of you to assume just because I don't wear the title of king that you shouldn't bow before me.
My breathing stalls, but the next words still slip off my tongue before I can swallow them down. I only bow for those who deserve it. He smirks, his body pressing into me, making heat surge through my middle, and my heart slams against my ribs. His hand slides up the outside of my sleeve, the fabric creating a delicious sensation against my skin, despite the way my insides are stewing with a vile brew of hatred and panic, not wanting him to see what's hidden behind my back.
I could always make you, he murmurs.
My nostrils flare, a small slice of fear winding its way around my spine like a rose vine, the thorns pricking me with warning. I ignore it. You could try, I snark. His palm skims over my shoulder until it meets flesh, my stomach jumping when he touches me, skin to skin. This is inappropriate, I rasp. His fingers dust across my collarbone before moving up the front of my throat, curling around my esophagus. His thumb presses beneath my chin, the pressure causing my head to tilt back until I'm meeting the fierce green of his eyes. My chest pulls tight, anxiety swirling through my middle, and something heavy settles deep in my belly. His nose skims the side of my cheek, moving back until it brushes against my ear.
I think you'll find I care little for what's appropriate.
His other hand grabs at my waist, and my eyes flutter from the heat of his touch, searing through the thin silk of my nightdress. My fingers tighten around the sheath of my blade. I could do it. He's distracted, and the knife would cut through his skin, sinking into his veins in seconds. But I didn't come this far to be messy, and I won't allow something as silly as emotion to cloud my judgment. A blunt stab of pain hits my shin, causing my legs to buckle. Tristan's grip is firm as he catches my fall, his hand pressing down. Bitterness rages through me as my kneecaps smack against the shiny tiled floor, causing me to wince from the impact, and the dagger clatters to the ground beside me. His eyes snap to the weapon, and he cocks his head.
Interesting.
My chest burns, teeth grinding as I glare at him.
I prefer you this way, he coos from above me, on your knees, chest heaving, and face flushed while you stare up at your betters.
He reaches down, his fingers cupping my chin and jerking until the muscles in my neck strain.
Let this be a lesson, little doe. Don't forget your place.
And where is that? I force out through the tightness in my throat, my body shaking from the anger that's pouring through my veins. He grins, and the sight of it is so sinister, it makes dread crawl through my insides like a thousand spiders.
Trembling at my feet.
Chapter 9. Tristan. Smoke curls in the air, a rolled joint perched between my two fingers as I sit, staring at my brother's oversized desk. Xander and Michael are talking of Sir Reginald's funeral, Or, more so, whether there should even be one. And as much as these two imbeciles make my stomach turn with their ramblings, being here and hearing what they're planning is better than staying in the dark. I wonder how they would react if they knew it was my hand that severed Reginald's flesh from bone, that it was me who he begged, pleading for salvation as if I were a god capable of granting mercy. I wish I could tell them that dear old Reginald wasn't so brave when there wasn't a table of men surrounding him, and that he pissed himself on the dirty cement floor, while I lit match after match and burnt pretty scars into his skin. "Sire, we need to reshift the focus," Xander implores. Michael groans, slamming his fist down on top of his desk. "I don't want to shift the focus, Xander. I want to find the filthy whore who dared to come into my castle, drop a man's head on the ground, spit at my feet, and then somehow disappear from the dungeons." Amusement trickles through my insides as I watch the fury rise to Michael's cheeks. My mind wanders to Lady Beatro, and I wonder how much fire it would take to see the heat beneath her flesh. "If we continue to bring up the disturbance," Xander continues, "the people will become uneasy. We need to shift the narrative, find a distraction." A chuckle rolls out of me, my leg crossing over my opposite knee. Michael spins to face me, running a hand through his hair. "Something funny, brother?" I shrug, flicking the ash of my cigarette onto the expensive rug beneath my feet. A lazy grin pulls at the corners of my mouth, and I lean back in my chair, allowing the cushions to mold to my muscles. I wave my hand through the air. "Far be it from me to interrupt." "You're already interrupting," Michael snaps. "What are you even doing here? Suddenly caring about the state of the monarchy?" His tone is sarcastic, and I smile, biting back the urge to prove him wrong, to show him that all I've ever cared about is the monarchy. "Just providing moral support after what was no doubt a tumultuous past few evenings for you. Are you doing all right, brother? You look a little pale." I sit forward, my brows hiking into my hairline. "That woman didn't scare you, did she?" Xander bristles in my peripheral. "Get to the point, Tristan, if you have one." I spin the ring on my finger, the lion's diamond eyes glinting with every turn. "Like I said, I'm just here for support." "Tristan? Xander?" I reply, elongating the vowels as they roll off my tongue. "While I can appreciate your sudden need to be in the conversation, it's a little late to play the part of dutiful prince." His eyes trail down my form, as if the mere sight of me is offensive. Maybe it is. My grin drops, something heavy twisting my stomach. "There is no part to play. I am His Royal Highness Tristan Farser, second son to the late King Michael II, whether you want to admit that or not." Standing up, I move across the room until I'm in front of him, my body towering over his short and gangly frame. He glares up at me with his ridiculous horn-rimmed glasses, and I stare down at him, bringing the joint to my mouth and inhaling, taking in each uncomfortable tick of his features and every pebble of sweat that beads on his brow. I exhale, blowing out the smoke so it coats his face, making him sputter. "I know you're a very important man, Alexander," I whisper, "standing here, having the ear of the new king, and the one before him, thinking you're beyond reproach." My hand grasps his shoulder, allowing the burning tip of the rolled paper to rest close to his neck. The urge to stick it on his skin and listen to it sizzle is strong, but I hold myself back. "But I want you to remember two things. One, that my blood runs truer than yours, even if it is hidden beneath ghastly ink and a blackened soul." I pause, enjoying the way he fidgets under my stare.
"And the second?"
he asks, his Adam's apple bobbing.
"The second is that I know what you did to my father,
and I'll never forget those who left him alone to die. The burning edge of my cigarette grazes against his jugular, my stomach somersaulting in delight as he jerks in my grasp. Oops, I smile. Did that hurt?
You know much less about your father than you think,
Xander hisses through clenched teeth. Huffing out a laugh, I glance at the ground before meeting his gaze again. And you don't know me. What about Sarah? Michael cuts in. Let's announce our betrothal officially. That should be enough to shift the narrative. I turn my attention to my brother. Already on a first-name basis? My, you move fast. Michael's eyes narrow. She's my wife. Not yet, I reply, my stomach souring. Grabbing Xander's hand, I wrench it toward me, laying the still-lit joint in his palm and closing his fingers around it. His face scrunches in obvious disgust. You'll get rid of this for me, won't you, Xander? Leaving so soon? Michael asks, sticking out his bottom lip. Pity. I lift a shoulder. You two are dreadfully boring. Talking about important things isn't supposed to be entertaining, although, he rubs his chin, chuckling, you've never been one to care about anything important. The hole in my chest twists, making my teeth grind. Yes, well, if we all cared about importance, brother, who would care for you? His smile drops. Go fetch Lady Beatro before you run off to whatever whorehouse you're planning to waste your night in. I click my tongue and nod, spinning on my heel as I head for the door. If I were to turn around and look back, I'm sure I would see their faces painted in surprise at how easily I agreed. I'm not known for how well I take orders, but surprisingly, I want to find her. Arousal surges through my insides, pouring down my middle and pooling in my groin as I remember the way she looked last night. On her knees, chest heaving, and hair mussed, as she stared up at me like she wanted to knife me where I stood. Most likely with the one she was hiding behind her back. No one else has treated me the way she does, with anger brimming so potently that it tries to bleed through their gaze and strike me down. It makes me want to shove my cock down her throat and see if she'd try to bite it off, just so I could punish her for using teeth. So, I'll go find my little doe, if only to get off on her hate before I toss her to a king.
Chapter 10. Sarah B. There must be a dozen different kitchens throughout the castle, but the one I'm in now is the largest. Before coming to Saxham, I've always been free to roam where I please, within reason, and then retreat to my room and bask in the solitude. But now, the only time I get to myself is in my bed at night. I never realised how insane it makes me to be surrounded by people. It's now been 4 days since I've seen or heard from my husband-to-be. And while my mind should be focused on the future and everything I came here to accomplish, I'm finding it difficult. But not for the reasons it should be. I can't even sleep without visions of Prince Tristan making his way into my chambers and forcing me onto my knees, except this time for a different reason. It's disgusting. Not because I'm a stranger to the act, although if anyone knew of my dalliances, I most likely wouldn't be sitting here, but because out of all the people I've met in my entire life, I've decided Prince Tristan must be the worst. Him invading my dreams is an unfortunate turn of events. Earlier, while playing bridge in my sitting room, Ophelia recommended an afternoon nap, no doubt noting the deep circles beneath my eyes. I took her up on the offer, although I wouldn't be using the time to catch up on sleep. Instead, I grabbed the opportunity and made my way here, hoping to find someone working in the kitchens. I want to meet the people who are the true eyes and ears of the castle, ingrain myself in their loyalty, so when the time comes, I can depend on them. And that's how I ended up sitting at a large metal table in a room the size of a house, with Paul, one of the castle's cooks, banging on pots and pans while he makes me tea and an afternoon snack. Honestly, Paul wipes his brow, his auburn hair held back beneath a netted cap. You're gorgeous, m'lady, but your pretty eyes make me nervous when you watch me like that. I smile, tapping my nails on the table's top. No need to be nervous, Paul. I like your company already. You do? He asks, spinning around from the stove. Of course you do. I mean, he huffs before throwing his arm across his belly and bowing at the hips. Thank you, m'lady. Amusement bubbles in my chest. You know, you don't have to be so proper when it's just the two of us. Forgive me, he smiles. I'm not used to royals coming down here to socialize. He walks toward me, plopping a plate down on the table and gesturing toward the dish. I grin back, leaning across the metal surface. Well, I think you'll find I'm not quite like the other royals. Technically, a smooth voice cuts in, you're not a royal at all. My spine bristles, every single hair follicle standing on end as Prince Tristan appears out of nowhere. His lips tipped up in that infuriatingly lazy grin, his eyes zoned in on me. Paul gasps, dropping to a knee. Your Highness? Hello, Paul. Keeping our soon-to-be queen company? Surprise flickers through me. I hadn't expected him, of all people, to be on a first-name basis with the servants. Most people aren't. So what if he is? I cut in. He turns to me, his eyes flashing. I sit straighter in my chair. Then I suppose he's the lucky one today, isn't he? My stomach flips as he steps in close. Always in places I shouldn't find you, aren't you, little doe? My shoulders straighten. There's nothing wrong with getting to know the people who breathe life into the castle walls. His brows rise. I agree. A muffled thud from the opposite side of the room soars through the air, breaking our eye contact as I twist to face the wall. What was that? No one answers me. Scooting back from the table, I stand, grabbing the front of my skirts as I walk toward where the noise came from. Another thud, this time louder, and I'm sure it's coming from inside the walls. I spin around, my eyes locking on Tristan. What's behind here? He doesn't respond, leaning against the corner of the table, crossing his feet and smirking. My jaw tenses. Paul? Paul wrings his hands together in front of his oversized belly. I'm not sure I know what you mean. I quirk a brow when another thud hits. You don't hear that? Maybe there's something wrong with your ears, Tristan suggests. My hearing is just fine, thank you. My eyes narrow. Stop making me feel crazy. He straightens off the table and moves closer until he's standing in front of me, his shadow dwarfing mine. Do I have that much power over you already? I haven't given you any power, I seethe, my hand itching to reach out and smack the grin off his face. He tisks, shaking his head. That's the thing about power, ma petite monteuse. It's never given freely. You have to take it. You speak French? I don't know what he just called me, but the way it flowed off his tongue like silky chocolate makes my insides quake. He smirks. I'm a prince. His arm rises, and my breath sticks in my lungs, waiting for the searing heat of his touch, but it never comes. Instead, he presses his hand next to my head. There's a loud creak, and then the wall is moving, an entryway appearing as if it's formed out of thin air. My eyes grow wide as I twist to face it, staring into a darkened tunnel. Its walls made of rock, as if the castle has melded its insides within the mountain it sits on. Lady! My hand moves to my chest, my mind whirling with questions. Do the tunnels only exist within the buildings? Do they go underground to town? Who all knows of them? Hey, lady, you're stepping on my sword. I'm jolted into the present. my eyes swinging down into the light brownish-orange gaze of a child. Oh! I step back, my foot releasing the toy sword trapped beneath me. I'm so sorry. My corset digs into my ribs as I lean down to pick it up, staying crouched as I hold it in my hands. Are you a knight? I ask. His chest puffs out, a small smudge of what looks like black soot streaked across his brown skin. I'm the king! Oh, my eyes widen, and I raise my hand to my head. Of course, I should have known. You look the part of a mighty king. Bowing my head, I hold out his toy. Forgive me, your majesty. A smile tips the corners of his lips as he reaches out, taking the sword back from my hands. Who are you? He asks. I've never seen you before, and my mama knows all the people who work here. This is Lady Beatrice, Tristan says from behind me. Milady, this is Simon. Simon's head cocks, his eyes trailing up and down my form as if he's judging whether I'll get to live or die. Do we like her? He asks. Tristan chuckles, and the sound sends confusion tinkling through my insides, twisting up the narrative of him I've had painted in my head. He seems genuine with this child, as if he cares for him. His stare burns through me as he places his hands in his pockets and rocks back on his heels. We do. My breath catches, butterflies erupting until my stomach soars. Simon scrunches his nose as he looks at me. You're still a girl, though, so I can't like you too much. I laugh, standing upright and running my palms down the front of my dress, trying to shake off the unsettled feeling brewing inside of me. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint, Your Majesty, but there's not much I can do to help that. Yeah, I guess not. His eyes glance over at me once more before turning to Paul. I'm hungry. Got any grub? Twisting toward the prince, I place my hands on my hips, keeping my voice low. Why are you always showing up everywhere I am? I was told you were a ghost in this castle, yet here you are, all the time. Have you been asking about me? He grins. Irritation clamps down on my middle. Please, don't flatter yourself. Does it bother you that I'm here? You bother me, in general, I reply. He sighs. My brother requests your presence. I'm simply the pony brought here to carry you back. I laugh. I find it hard to believe you'd ever allow yourself to be ridden like a horse. His eyes flash, and embarrassment bleeds through me, realizing what I just said and how it sounded. His mouth opens, but I throw my hand in the air. Don't say anything. Tristan, you can't leave! Simon squeals, pushing past me so fast I'm jerked to the side. For the third time today, I'm surprised, as this small child throws himself around Tristan's legs in a tight hug.